These are the sounds of history. Warm sounds, like Captain Glenn Miller and his band of the Technical Training Command.
Frightening sounds, like an early atomic test.
3, 2, 1, 0.
Impassioned sounds. Dr. Martin Luther King addressing a Washington rally.
Let freedom ring and when this happens. When we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Familiar sounds, like actor James Stewart in the 1940s.
Have you ever been to Washington, your capital? Been there lately? Well, let me tell you, it's a place of buildings and of boom and bustle, of the fever of emergency, of workers working overtime, of windows lighted late into the night. It's a handsome city, proud of its sturdy name, proud of the men who stopped there and made decisions, proud of its domes and lawns and monuments. Of course, Washington is like some other cities you've seen. It has streetcars, haberdasheries, newsstands, coffee shops, and slums. At busy intersections, there are neon traffic signs, which, when the light's against you, say,
don't walk.
And when the light changes,
walk.
It's a tourist city, which is proper when you think how much of history a busy guide can cover in a day. And when you realize that the District of Columbia belongs to all the people of the states. The tourists know that here their voices have been heard from clear back home. That here their votes are put to work.
Sounds that change an image. Sounds can be documents. In the National Archives in Washington, tens of thousands of sound recordings document the varieties of 20th century life. Although they are on cylinders, spools, film soundtracks, discs, wire, and tape, they are considered to be documents as valid for the study of history as the written or printed word.
In many ways, they are more valid documents. They are the living record of the dead past, true history because they record events as they really were, not the jottings of someone remembering what happened. Sound documents have personality and feeling. They provide insight to the foibles of the individual, all of the pauses, stammerings, accents, intonations, and regional inflections. When we hear the sound, we are there.
Often the sounds confirm or shatter our images of the person. We have read about Theodore Roosevelt, and we have seen his photographs, rugged, masculine, rough rider, devoted to the outdoor life. And yet, when he recorded a speech in 1912, the recording medium itself distorted the voice, and thus our image of the man.
The principles for which we stand are the principles of fair play and a square deal for every man and every woman in the United States.
Less than 2 years after the formation of the major radio networks of NBC and CBS, and only a year after the passage by Congress of the first Radio Act in 1927, candidates for public office began to use the radio medium for campaigning. Whereas a presidential hopeful might have been heard in his own district or region before, or at the most by a limited number of people who could see him as well as hear him, the advent of radio meant wide diffusion of the voice without the visual image. They say that Al Smith lost the election against Hoover in 1928 because of the religious issue. Could his voice also have been a factor to voters outside of the Northeast?
Now let's look at the record. Prohibition has found a new line of endeavor for the underworld. They brought life to the bootleggers, and the bootleggers begot the hijackers, and the hijackers begot the racketeers. My friends of the radio audience, the only cure for the ills of democracy is more democracy.
On the other hand, most people think of President Coolidge as a somewhat provincial New Englander. As he welcomed Charles Lindbergh back from his historic flight in 1927, his voice does not belie that image.
We have made many flying records. Our army, flyers, have circumnavigated the globe. One of our Navy men started from California and flew far enough to have reached Hawaii, but being off his course, landed in the water.
But being off course, landed in the water. This brings out another aspect of sound documents, the sometimes intentional, but more often unintentional effect on a crowd of a speaker's words. Documents that reproduce a speech rarely tell us whether the crowd cheered, applauded politely, laughed, booed, or worst of all, kept silent. Charles Lindbergh is a stand-up comedian? Hard to believe. But the lone eagle, lucky, plucky Lindbergh, responded to President Coolidge's welcome, and one has the feeling that the response of the audience led him into even lighter remarks. Bob Hope would envy the routine.
When I landed at Le Bourget a few weeks ago, I landed with the expectancy and the hope of being able to see Europe. It was the first time I had ever been abroad. I'd seen a number of very interesting things as I flew over southern England, the south coast of Ireland, and France. I'd only been gone from America for 2 days, a little less. And I wasn't in any hurry to get back.
Perhaps Charles Lindbergh would have philosophized on the future of aviation if the audience had remained silent. He did not have a message that night, but many people think that a broadcast should be used only to convey messages. Amelia Earhart, the trophy-winning woman aviatrix of the 1930s, conveyed a message in a broadcast in 1931.
Perhaps I'm prejudiced, but to me it seems that no other phase of modern progress contrives to maintain such a brimming measure of romance and beauty coupled with utility as does aviation. Aviation, this young modern giant, exemplifies the possible relationship of women and the creations of science. Although women as yet have not taken full advantage of its use and benefits, air travel is as available to them as to men.
And during World War II, Mary McLeod Bethune sent a message to her fellow blacks that portended changes to come.
Let us, therefore, throw off all petty jealousies and hatreds. Let us fill our hearts with love and tolerance and join hands across this wide expanse of space and make the dream and the hope of democracy a reality.
And the famed physicist Albert Einstein recorded a message at Princeton to be played to a student world government rally being held at Northwestern University.
You cannot rely on that, my young friend. May you succeed in activating the young generation in this sense, so that it will strive for a policy of peace on a grand scale. Thus, you can not only defend yourself successfully, but you can serve your country and your descendants in a degree as was not given to any previous generation.
And some sounds of history have meaning to us only if we know why they were made or how they struck their listeners. During the Great Depression, the federal government provided funding to put the jobless to work. Not just laborers digging ditches, but also writers writing, actors acting, and performing groups performing. One such WPA-sponsored group was the Los Angeles Negro Chorus. Other blacks sang alone. At the invitation of the Department of the Interior, Contralto Marian Anderson used the steps of the Lincoln Memorial for this and other songs in a 1939 concert.
History are often familiar sounds, containing a familiar message. We wonder at the similarities in the conditions of yesterday and today. The more things change, the more they stay the same. What is past is prologue.
Some 40 years ago, in 1935, the Oklahoma philosopher Will Rogers put his finger on a question that we are still contemplating.
You know, we're always talking about pioneers and what great folks the old pioneers were. Well, I think if we just stop and look history in the face, a pioneer wasn't a thing in the world but a guy that wanted something for nothing, that's about all, you know. And he was a guy that wanted to live off everything that nature had done. He wanted to cut a tree down that didn't cost him anything, but he never did plant one, you know. He wanted to plow up land that should have been left to the grass. I don't know, we're just now learning, you know, that we can rob from nature the same as we can rob from an individual. All he had was an axe and a plow and a gun, and he just went out and lived off nature. But it's really, he thought it was nature he's living off of, but it was really future generations that he was living off of, you know?
And as if that statement wasn't prophetic, less than a decade later, the federal government was using the medium of radio to educate the public to an urgent wartime crisis in this rationing broadcast featuring Eddie Cantor, Jack Benny, and Gracie Allen.
Gracie, haven't you heard that gasoline is being rationed?
Well, of course I know gasoline is being rationed. My goodness, what do you take me for, a dunce? I've read all about it. You're only allowed one cup a day.
One cup? Gracie, that's coffee.
Oh, Eddie, don't be silly. A car won't run on coffee.
No, Gracie, I don't think you understand. You see, cars run on gasoline. So at this point, gasoline has to be rationed.
But why? There's plenty of gasoline.
I know, but the real reason for cutting down on the amount of gasoline we use is to save rubber.
Oh, really? Well, that's very interesting. I had no idea gasoline was made from rubber.
It isn't, you see.
But I have the impression that gasoline came out of wells in the ground.
That's right.
And I've often thought how convenient it was for the filling stations that those wells were always found under the busiest street corners.
And it was about 30 years ago that the Office of Price Administration and Pete Seeger were telling us of something that we know all too well today.
I was feeling kind of hungry, so I thought I'd buy some bread. I went into the corner grocery store. I took out the usual money, but the grocer shook his head. 'Cause a dollar ain't a dollar anymore. Oh, a dollar bill, don't buy what it used to, don't buy what it used to, don't buy what it used to. A dollar bill, don't buy what it used to, 'cause a dollar ain't a dollar anymore.
Most of these sounds, from Glenn Miller to Pete Seeger, are recordings made by or for the federal government to inform, instruct, or entertain. In its collection of federal sound recordings, the National Archives has vast holdings that bring us the audio documents of our past. We've heard Teddy Roosevelt and Cal Coolidge. There are other leaders who inspired or calmed us.
The sound of ruffles and flourishes just naturally means the appearance of the President of the United States. Franklin Roosevelt to a joint session of Congress.
Let us redouble our efforts. A tremendous, costly, long-enduring task in peace as well as in war is still ahead of us. But As we face that continuing tide, we may know that the state of this nation is good. The heart of this nation is sound. The spirit of this nation is strong. The faith of this nation is eternal.
And President Eisenhower announcing the Korean armistice.
Tonight we greet with prayers of thanksgiving the official news that an armistice was signed almost an hour ago in Korea. It will quickly bring to an end the fighting between the United Nations forces and the communist armies. For this nation, the cost of repelling aggression has been high. In thousands of homes, it has been incalculable. It has been paid in terms of tragedy. With special feelings of sorrow and of solemn gratitude, we think of those who were called upon to lay down their lives in that far-off land to prove once again that only courage and sacrifice can keep freedom alive upon the earth.
There are sounds of other world leaders reaffirming their faith in the future, such as Winston Churchill at MIT.
Do not, my friends, I beg you, underrate the enduring strength of Britain. As I said at Fulton, do not suppose that half a century from now you will not see 70 or 80 millions of Britain spread about the world and united in defense of our traditions, our way of life, and the world causes which you and we espouse. Unite. United we stand, secure. Let us then move forward together in discharge of our mission and our duty, fearing God and nothing else.
There are haunting voices. Some are poets, such as Carl Sandburg.
His words at Gettysburg were sacred, yet strange with a color of the familiar. We cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it far beyond our poor power to add or detract.
Some voices are those of soldiers, like General Douglas MacArthur.
The world has turned over many times since I took the oath on the plain at West Point. And the hopes and dreams have long since vanished. But I still remember the refrain of one of the most popular barrack ballads of that day, which proclaimed most proudly that old soldiers never die. They just fade away.
And there are stirring, strident voices. The demagogic mass appeal of Adolf Hitler cannot be captured from the uninspiring pages of Mein Kampf. But in a wobbly overseas radio broadcast, picked up from Danzig in 1939, one gets the flavor.
Und die Herren mögen überzeugt sein, durch ihre lächerliche Propaganda werden sie das deutsche Volk nicht mehr zerstören.
By their ridiculous propaganda, says Mr. Hitler, the other powers will not be able to separate the German people from me.
Diese Propagandastümper müssen erst bei uns längere Zeit in die Lehre gehen.
These poor propagandists should take a lesson from the German propaganda.
Wenn Völker zerbrechen, dann wird dies nicht das deutsche Volk sein, das für sein Recht kämpft, dass er keinen Krieg will, sondern das angegriffen wurde, sondern dann werden jene Völker zerbrechen, die allmählich sehen.
And 24 years later, an American president stood in Berlin and proclaimed,
2,000 years ago, the proudest boast was, Civis Romanus sum. Today, in the world of freedom, the proudest boast is, Ich bin ein Berliner.
The strains of a familiar song bring to mind people, places, and events of times past. A melody often evokes a memory. Anyone who lived in the United States during World War II will recognize this song as the second national anthem of the time. With it, Kate Smith helped sell war bonds, boosted recruiting, spurred on scrap metal drives, opened sporting events, and signed off radio stations at night. It has recently been revived to spur on a professional hockey team to capture the Stanley Cup.
From the mountain to the prairie, to the ocean, white with foam, God bless America.
These are not just the sounds of history, they are history. Not just a recreated interpretation of the past, but the past preserved and played back. We have bridged the generations. We can share our civilization's experience with our grandparents and with our grandchildren.